Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tape traders of all shapes and sizes, thank you again for joining me. I'm JD Sloan, and this is another episode of the Tape Trader's Guide to 90s Pro Wrestling. On today's episode, I'm gonna play a portion of an interview I did with Francisco Chiazzo, and then later on, Jeremiah Plunkett kind of sits in, and we do a little bit about their tag team. This is the last hour and a half or hour 20 minutes of an interview series that I'm filming called Grizzled. Francisco Chiazzo's Grizzled is Volume 1. It is available for order now from WrestleTopia. So if you want to go to facebook.com/1 WrestleTopia, you can contact me there. It's $10. It's a great interview, but we just kind of touch on the AWA days, his move to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, the movie, the documentary Journeyman, and then his venture back to Florida, all the different things that have happened in between there, his opportunity to become the WWN trainer. So I hope everyone enjoys this. Like I said, it's about an hour and 20 minutes, and this was, I filmed this not thinking about doing this as a podcast, but when we met up at the New South Arena to finish the shoot, I thought, hey, why not? Why don't I plug in my microphone and record underneath the filming? So the volume is a little bit low, and that's just because of where the microphone was positioned. So maybe turn up your volume a little bit, and I really hope you enjoy this, and thanks for listening. So I'm going to simulcastly record a podcast at the exact same time.
Okay.
So we'll shoot. We're doing.
Are you doing from here up?
Yeah, I'm shooting from.
So I can put my water bottle.
Yeah.
What we did at the hotel, I got a Diet Mountain Dew can the whole time. And the whole time I'm watching the clips he sent me, all I can see is that freaking Diet Mountain Dew can between my legs.
It was perfect, though.
Between my legs. No, I'm not touching that. It's Band Hill. Nope. Nope.
I think it's Kid Dynamite, so I have AIDS.
Oh. Yuck.
All right. Are you ready?
So I moved here, right? That's what
So, yeah, we're going to start off moving to Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Yeah. Deciding, like.
Yeah, deciding okay. We're going to move.
We're going to do this, and we're all in, and then everything falls apart after you're all in.
All right.
3, 2.
You know, so I remember sitting there with Stormy saying, you know, and using the quote that Michael Jordan. And you know, of course, I typically use these things whatever because usually calls me out on my bullshit. But I said, you know, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. You know, so I said, this is a shot we got to take. You know, I've done Deep South, I've been to Impact, Ring of Honor, and done, you know, been to England and China, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and all these places. And you know, I haven't really, in my opinion, really, really got my shot. Like I've had several small shots, but this to me, and the way I looked at it, the way Chase had explained it to me, and. Not to take a shot at him because I mean, he did the best he could with what he knew and what he was dealing with, and gave us all the information to the best of his knowledge. This was a shot, you know. There was legitimate money behind this. There was, you know, a legitimate company. I mean, I did my research. I just didn't pack up my you know car and on a whim. You know, I did my research. And I looked her up and I looked, you know, Leah Hulana up and I looked up the Brooklyn Bell Bonds and I looked up these companies. Everything was legitimate. The money that was behind it was exactly what was explained. And everything was on the up and up. You know, so we took a chance and we took a shot and we moved to the thriving metropolis of, you know, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And you know, with the hopes of running this wrestling company as well as the reality show, of course. And I think the reality show was really kind of pushed to the wayside a little bit. Not a lot of people talk about it. But the whole idea of this whole thing wasn't just, you know, AWA. It wasn't just that. It was the whole thing of the reality show. The reality show for wrestling, nobody cares about. Nobody would give a shit. Nobody would have cared about a reality show for male boxing. Put those two things together. Now you got something. Well, you know, how cool would that be? You know, we're getting ready to hit the ring, and Chase Stevens and Francisco Chiazzo have to saddle up and go, you know, put somebody in handcuffs. Hopefully more Chase Stevens than me, because I didn't want to really put anybody in handcuffs. I just wanted to pretend. But nonetheless, I mean, it was a really cool concept, you know, and we all bought into it. Myself, Stormy, but hell, you know, Damian Wayne, his wife, you know, so it wasn't just us that moved here. There's a lot of people that believed her and took her to her word. And you would think guys that have been in the business for as long as we have would have been able to see right through her. And I racked my brain over and over and over again trying to figure out how I let this pass me, because for many years I kind of prided myself on being able to call people on their bullshit. She was good. She was good, man. She was, and still good to this day. There's not a day that goes by I don't look at an obituary and try to see that she's dead somewhere or somebody put her in the ground. I swear to God, I'll throw a party when it happens. She's an evil human being. She's terrible. She's a horrible mother, a horrible human being, horrible woman. I really don't think that there's a big bone in her body. And someone who hides behind the Bible, and I'm not a religious person whatsoever, someone who manages to hide behind the Bible as well as she does, it doesn't belong with the rest of us on this earth. She doesn't belong with having a such an amazing daughter that she has. And I feel really bad for that girl because she's the one that's ultimately going to suffer when her mom gets run over by an 18-wheeler, which I hope is today.
Well, I don't... So kind of talk about the plan for the touring, because the whole idea of this touring company, you know, what was it supposed to be, 4 days a month?
Yeah, it was 4 days a month, yeah.
So kind of talk about that, because that seemed ambitious, but like you said, I mean, the money was there, so it's like, why couldn't this work? There's no reason why it couldn't work other than her ego got in front of the whole entire thing, and it wasn't a pro wrestling show.
Her tits got
but, so what was the idea, though?
Well, the idea was 4 days a month, and Chase had a very ambitious dream of 4 days a week. And
right.
Now, to his credit, that's extremely ambitious. To the discredit of that, without having the crew available, without having the manpower to do something like that, from production to promoting to even the wrestling portion itself, 4 days a week, that's rough when you don't have the manpower to do it. I remember our ring crew and our production guys, yourself. I mean, I would never forget, it might have been Gallatin, I can't remember the exact town that we were in, but I remember I sat down next to you and I looked at you.
Fairfield. Fourth day of the 4 days.
Yeah. And it was, you literally looked at me and you were gray. Like, I asked you if you were okay and you were like, man, I don't even feel like I'm alive. It didn't really click to me just how hard that you guys were working to put this thing together for us. And, you know, the 4 days a month was the first ambition. And we came in for the first tour. And I say tour because I've been on legitimate tours, but we call this a tour. We got snowed in, the first one. And we did 1 date out of four.
Yeah.
I got paid for all four, which is great, which is ultimately what really kind of sparked me, you know, to make the move.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, that's...
You can trust this.
I trusted right. her. When she took us out to dinner, I saw the tab, and it was well over $1,500. I mean, it was spare no expense, right? So red flag should have went up, but the worker part of me was like, hey, I'm getting taken care of for the first time in a long time, so I'm going to ride this wave for as long as I can ride it, right? Well, and we did, you know, so we made the decision to move. And again, to Chase's credit, I remember the conversation he and I had. He goes, brother, just give it a chance. Let it get off the ground first before you pick up and move. And I didn't listen. And a lot of people don't know that. And Chase did not deter us from moving here, but he was looking out for us. He really was. And he did his credit with looking out for one of the boys. And Stormy lumped into that as well. Sometimes she walks like she's one of the boys. That's a whole other story for another time. But that being said, you know, he really did try to kind of deter us and kind of slow us down a little bit, you know. But of course, I've never been one to listen to anybody. And I full speed ahead, you know, and we packed up everything and headed to Nashville. And you know, we did it without a second thought. Like we when I say we did research, we did, but it wasn't this big long drawn out 6 month discussion and it was, we sat down one night and we said, let's do it. And she said, you sure? You know, I said, it's you and me, kid, let's do it. And we did. And we moved here. The first day she met us at the house in Murfreesboro, helped us unpack our truck, load our house, gave us jobs at the bail bonds company. And I was doing her books because I had an accounting background. And I was literally finding money for her that was lost. You know, the money wasn't lost.
The money
wasn't lost. So she didn't count on me being a smart wrestler. She counted on me being some dum-dum who, you know, lifted heavy things and put them down. Well, because I have a finance and accounting background, I found that money immediately, okay? Cash that was coming in, that was to her, okay, in her books. It's pretty obvious to see what was going on here, but the money wasn't accounted for. She was hiding money from the IRS. It didn't take a genius to figure that out.
Right.
Anybody with a basic math background could have really figured that out, but she really didn't count on that. That being said, when I came to her and I said, hey, the look on her face was not of horror, but just like, well, fuck, now what do I do? Because this guy found my money, you know, that's what she hired me for, right? So we got past that. And started sending me out in the truck with the vest on and the badge and the whole nine yards. I had no training on how to do any of this crap, you know. I could handle myself, but there's a big difference between handling yourself and being a bail bondsman. You got to go abide by certain laws, certain rules, certain things. You can't just yank people out of bed. And, you know, it's not like the movies. You know, there's legitimate things you have to follow, or you get shot and dead. You know, there's a big difference there. So there was really no, when we moved here, the bail bond side of it was where the first red flag started going on, you know. The wrestling still hadn't, no red flags started going up because everything was working fine. You know, we had dumb shooter here promoting the shows, you know, get paid $400 a week to go leg work.
The April tour was successful.
It was great. It was fantastic.
Every 300 people great. Each and every.
It was packed every show. And we were rocking and rolling. And we had some, again, just like in film journey, it was the best of the best of the best. We had everybody, you know, outside of Jeremiah Plunkett, which we suggested. And I want to say next, he's sitting right over there. But I'll never forget having a conversation about talent. And we were trying to, there he is, Journeyman. That's it. The other half is my better half, Journeyman. I remember having meetings about talent, and she couldn't grasp the fact and understand of what it takes to build a company. You have to have these guys, like, you had to have your Gangrels, you had to have your Tracy Smothers, you had to have, you know, your Chase Stevens, you had to have your Wolfie Deeds, you had to have these guys in order to build your younger talent. And of course, she didn't understand that, just like we didn't understand the Bell Bonds business. She was trying to come in and tell us how to run our wrestling portion of the business. And because she was such an egotistical, maniacal twat, her face and tits were on the cover of every poster. Well, doesn't take a genius to figure out we're in Tennessee, we're in the middle of a Bible Belt here. Okay, you know how many times we went out to promote or do meet and greets, first thing on people's minds were, hey, this looks great except for her. You know, we can't show this to kids, we can't put this up in our school, we can't put this up in our store window because this woman looks like she's straight out of a C-rated porn video from 1971.
It looked like burlesque shows.
It's exactly what it looked like. It's funny you said burlesque. Yeah. That's a term that was used.
I didn't realize what a bad reputation she had until I started to work for her.
Yeah.
I always just saw her on TV and thought, oh, she's... I thought the whole deal was a work. Yeah. I thought it was a persona. Yeah. And she was this ditzy idiot with big tits, but she was smart making all this money.
Smarter than all of us.
But you know what? She was an idiot. She was just a straight up idiot.
She got lucky.
And people did not like her. And when they saw her associated to it, they were like, nope, we don't want no part of that.
When you know who Fred Ottman is, of course.
Yeah.
Tugboat, and I became very good friends with him over the years, and his wife, Sheila. When we moved here, I remember I told her I was moving to Murfreesboro. I said, hey, that's my old hometown. I used to live there. And I said, oh, that's awesome. I said, well, my office, the AWA office, is actually in Franklin. She goes, Franklin, Tennessee? I said, yeah. She goes, that's where I went to high school. She went to school in Franklin, Tennessee. She goes, who are you working for? And I said Leah's name. And Sheila, bless her heart, she's an older lady, and she goes, fuck her. She is a piece of shit. And I remember just going, my face turned red because Sheila's like this little old lady, and she's like sweet and nice, and Fred's this big, gentle old man, and he's just, and his face got red, and I was just like, oh my God, she was crazy. I didn't know how to take that, you know? Uh-huh. And then I started thinking, okay, well, not everybody likes everybody. Not everybody's cup of tea, so who knows, right? So when I first started going around towns and started mentioning her name, and she wasn't as well-liked as I thought. And again, business is business. When you run your own business, you're going to make enemies. If you have friends, you're not a successful business person. So I've learned that over the years. But the amount of people that disliked her, and it wasn't just women. It wasn't women because she had tits or she was attractive. It was women, guys, grandfathers, grandmothers, people, cops, bankers, lawyers. People just did not like her at all. Okay. And for someone who did a service in getting people out of jail, you'd think she would have two more friends. You know, help out. And you know, the red flags that started going up with the wrestling portion was after the April tour, which was extremely successful, was when we got to around, I think it was June,
Yeah.
And we she decided she wanted to like expand and go further out from where she was comfortable and where she had her commercials and where she had her billboards and where she had her, like, Knoxville. Why would you go to Knoxville?
Yeah.
Knoxville was a disaster. I remember thinking
to a 21 and up bar.
Right, and it baffled me, and it showed that she really didn't understand what it would take to promote a show. Yeah. I remember Chase and I sitting down with her going, literally, it was black and white. Here's how much it's gonna cost. Promote, here's how much everything's gonna cost. Here's how much we're gonna, at best, if we bring in, we're gonna not even break even. Okay, so we're already on the losing end of the slate on our second or third tour, okay? It's not good, you know, so. That being said, we tried to get her to cancel Knoxville. She was hell-bent, just like the MTSU Center, when she told us it was gonna cost $5,000 to go in there, and they wanted like $17,000, and she was like, you're not gonna fucking tell me what to do, and she writes them a check. Boy, she sure fucked them. You're fuck me, no fuck them. I'm gonna write you this check for $17,000, goddammit. You're not gonna tell. What a mark.
And I mean, 300 people in a building.
Yeah, I remember looking at this. I remember I sent the picture to Ron Neamey, and he goes, so when the doors open?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's 5 minutes to bell time. I said, we're an hour difference from you guys. And he goes, wait, hold up. you're an hour away or five, whatever it was. It was real close to bell time. He goes, there's nobody in the building. He goes, that place holds like 7,000, 8,000 people. I said, yep. I said, I lost count around 185 people.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you said,
there,
but about
there,
300.
There was 300 people. There could have been 500. There could have been 1,000. It would have been standing room only. You know, I mean, it would have been. It would have looked great. And there would have been people all over the place.
Yep.
People came dressed up. That was like, that whole thing was... Everything fell apart after that, little by little by little, and it got so degrading because it's like the shows, Springfield had 300 people. The next time we show up, it had 150 people.
Yeah.
Then
it's
we show
direction.
Up and it had 70, had 75 people.
Yeah.
And it's like, where did all those people go? Because we're all promoting just as hard.
Yeah.
But then you realize that what was being promoted is not what people wanted to go and see.
I sat with her and I said, have you ever heard of a lemonade stand? She goes, of course I've heard of a lemonade stand. I said, okay, if on Monday you sell five glasses of lemonade, and on Tuesday you sell two, and on Wednesday you sell one, and Thursday you sell zero, that's going in the wrong direction of business. I said, you run a business, you should understand that, right? She goes, what do you call me, stupid? I said, no, I'm trying to get you to understand how the wrestling business works. I said, this is no different than any other business. You have to go in a profitable direction or you're going to sink. It doesn't matter if it's a lemonade stand, if you make pizza, or you want a wrestling company. You have to go in a profitable direction, or at least breaking even. You have to be coming close to breaking even. And when you got the MTSU Center at 17 grand, and then you're bringing in, you know, no offense to Joe, but you're bringing in Animal for, you know, God knows how much, and then you got, you know, then you got Gangrel, and then you got Chase, you got the payroll for all of us. You know, you're talking, you know, 20 grand right out the hoof.
Yeah.
You know, without even blinking an eye, 20 grand. And it wasn't, I remember Chase telling me that something as simple as a copy machine, you know, that you would make copies for pictures or whatever. There's about 20 different ones. She gets the one for like 3 grand. Chase goes, you could have bought one for $150. What are you doing? Take that back. Don't tell me we're getting the best. You see where that landed us. You know, she redid a whole building for 40 grand or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And granted, it was beautiful. Don't get me wrong.
But why?
I mean, what a great concept. But why?
Why?
She was avoiding paying $50 for a $50 hotel room. She spent 40 grand.
Yeah.
To avoid $50 hotel rooms. Okay. Over the course of 10 years, sure. Okay. Great. Over the course of 6 months, not so profitable.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're talking best of the best. We're talking good furniture here. We're not talking like, you know, Big Lots. Okay.
Yeah, the AWA office. Why? Yeah. Why do you need an AWA office?
She wanted to call it AWA Tower. She wanted to buy the building next to her and build a second one or renovate a second. I was like, you out of your mind?
But
you
now
have any wrestlers.
The hotel, though, there was a purpose for
there
that.
There was a purpose for it. And unfortunately, again, that's something that was paid for itself over time. It wasn't something that was going to pay for itself in 6 months. You know, I get where you want everybody in one area to get it. And it was going to be part of the reality show. So it was set up for the Hollywood look, and it was, I got and understood the show side of why she was doing what she was doing. We're talking scan design, furniture. We're not talking, again, we're not talking Big Lots. So we're talking, what, 8 rooms, okay? Each room had a bed, a dresser, mirror, whole nine yards. We're talking each room probably about 3,000 or 4,000 on the low side, okay? 8 rooms, do the math, okay? And then, of course, you had her house or whatever that was, where the bail bonds office was literally, I think I've never walked naked footed, is that English? Naked footed? Naked foot naked? No shoes on, whatever. My toes on a bear, like an actual bear skin. I don't think that ever happened. And the head, the face of the thing, the bear was there. It was the face. It was like just like the movies.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take all my clothes off and roll around naked on it because I had seen that in the movies. I was like, I gotta do this. But it was amazing. Like I got lost. The gym was like, it was like Al Capone's lair. Like I didn't even know, she said the gym's downstairs. I walked around downstairs for half an hour thinking I was being ribbed. And then finally, I pushed the door, and I was like, and then walk into like this lair of the gym.
Massages?
Yeah.
Massages?
Yeah, fucking, I wish I would have got a Chinese massage. I didn't get that, though.
But, I mean, talk about the fucking, the thrones. The thrones that were built, you know, that, I mean, you're spending, I think they were $2,500 a piece.
Well, there was three. There was three. A lot of people don't know there was three. There was two for her and Chase. When have you ever known Chase, other than a toilet, when have you ever known Chase Stevens to sit on a goddamn throne? He's not king. He's never
done
a king gimmick.
Yeah.
Okay? But in her ridiculous, conceited
That whole,
mind,
the whole, it, none of it was what, nobody wanted to come and see her sitting, and she would, during the matches, she would sit on the throne.
Yeah.
And look, for one, look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Doing nothing. But then when people would look at her, you know, she'd start doing these weird dances
yeah.
and like,
yeah.
you know,
it
it's just...
Was,
nobody wanted it. It was so
the
useless.
The snake charmers, I wish you would have charmed the fucking cobra. They're right in her fucking face.
Right.
But you're right, though. And I remember her telling me and explaining this to everybody meeting that she wanted her and Chase to sit on these thrones the whole show. And Chase was trying to explain it. I'm a wrestler. What am I going to do when I get done wrestling? When I have to wrestle? She goes, well, you just go to the ring from the throne. She couldn't get through her head that you can't. We're not sitting out there all night long. We have work to do. We got a show to run. We can't sit out there all night. You can.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. But we can't. So
yeah, they were the finest of wood. And
each one was, again, there was three. There was the two that matching ones that her and Chase had. They were anywhere between $2,500 and $4,000. Who cares? What if they were more than $3, I didn't give a shit. It was too much money. Then there was one that was in some office in Gallatin, I think, because I went there one time. And there was one that was just for her, $7,000, this fucking right? That doesn't even call it the sedan chair. I don't even know what a sedan chair was until I moved here. I don't know what a sedan chair was. A sedan is a car. I didn't know they had chairs too. It was a sedan chair, and it was supposed to give the illusion that people were carrying her to the ring like King Haku. Okay, but there was no job guys. It was just a bunch of guys carrying her to give the illusion that they were carrying her in midair. It was the most, but it rolled. It was $10,000, 10 grand, okay? Just in set, fake lions, dragons, uh-huh. Which by the way had nothing to do with Roman times. Uh-huh. Okay, I'm not really sure where dragons came from, but there was three of them in the AWA hotel, which scared the piss out of me because I came in this dark and I came out of a fucking elevator and a goddamn dragon, wah, right in my face. I was like, what is happening, right? Fake lions that Cassidy Riley loves.
And those things, they weighed 400, 500 pounds.
Yeah, it took 40 guys to carry out.
It took 4 people to carry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And this isn't like, it wasn't like hooks that you could put. No, this was a lion. It was shaped like a lion. It was built like a lion. It was 400 fucking pounds. And guys had to carry this off a truck.
Yep.
Two of them.
Yep.
And then there was stuffed wolves. Not really sure what stuffed wolves.
Remember what's the gimmick called that she sat on? At the and the guys had to carry her out.
The sedan chair. That's what I'm talking about. But they didn't actually pick it up. It was on wheels.
Oh.
It was it made to look like it was being carried. That's what I'm talking about. At least King Haku made these guys carry his ass in the fucking goddamn ring. I wish they would have. And I wish they would have dumped her right in the goddamn front row when she would have broken that. But paralyzed from like the face down, she could just blink like this. He was walking with poker in the fucking face. But it was so much waste. And I remember Chase telling me, he goes, I just want a ring. Maybe a couple lights. Guardrails, chairs. We'll build the rest. Those, just like, you know, they'll come. Build it, they'll come.
You sell tickets, you make money, you buy more stuff.
The set, it's great. Don't get me wrong, it's beautiful. It was beautiful. It was the absolute most beautiful set I've ever seen on the Independence. Okay? That and 50 cents will get you a cup of coffee because nobody cares. Because if you can't produce in the ring and you can't draw people back, all the set in the world doesn't mean shit. Okay? And we had the talent. But unfortunately, we weren't allowed to promote it and put the money in the right places to get those crowds back. You can't just, in this area is saturated with pro wrestling. Nashville has been a mecca of pro wrestling for as long as I can remember. And myself, I started one of my first matches I had in Nashville, Tennessee. So this place has been saturated with wrestling, so we had to give them something they hadn't already seen, okay? We couldn't give them, no offense, Chase Steeman and Chris Michaels. We had to give them something different. And again, it's not crapping on them. They're fantastic, but we had to give them something different. And we tried. Unfortunately, you can have Hulk Hogan across the street. If the people don't know he's there, doesn't matter, you know? And again, you bring in Gangrel, you bring in Animal, you bring in Tracy Smothers, you bring in, you know, all these guys in indie talent from all over the country, guys that moved here, like Damian Wayne, you got Micah Taylor, Tracy, Stormy, Rebel, and it didn't matter because no matter King Shane and Queen Taylor, no matter who you brought in, it didn't make a difference because it was all about her. It wasn't about the wrestling. At the end of the day, this was another vehicle to get herself over. And that's the mind fuck of the entire thing, was that guys like Chase have been around forever. Me, Amy, Chris Michael, all these guys, Micah, and everybody's been around for so long, you would think we would have saw right through this, but I think we were so excited and so enthralled by there actually being money behind something.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many times you've heard, man, there's money behind this.
Right.
And the guy can't buy a Happy Meal at McDonald's. And this was different. So we thought, unfortunately, the money was really just for her and to put herself over. So it's unfortunate, but you know, the chips fell where they may, and she hasn't died yet. So hopefully I get my wish this Christmas.
So it started in January, and September was the last tour.
Yeah.
At this time, you'd already, when did you meet Carver?
I had, believe it or not, I didn't actually meet James until I came here to work for the first time.
Right.
When AWA crashed and crumbled, and I'll back up a second. I remember I met
because it was right. It was right before the last tour, right? When you came here.
It might have been. It might have been right before. It might have been. You're right. It might have been right before. It was close.
Yeah.
It was either right before or right after. It was real close. I remember meeting Chase for dinner, and he was defeated. He looked defeated. I'd never seen Chase not walk with his head up, and he was slumped over in a chair. Didn't look like he slept in weeks. We're all broke. You know, nobody's. You know, I had no idea that his paychecks had stopped 6, 7, 8 weeks before they had. I also didn't know that he showed up to the last show that we had with the payroll. With his tax return money that he was going to willingly pay everybody because he didn't think she was going to pay anybody and the guys were going to go without being paid. That's the kind of person he was. That being said, you kind of see the writing on the wall and you start trying to look for different avenues. Oh, we're in Tennessee. I get wrestle 7 days a week here. So, but I didn't know anybody. You know, like we've been doing the AWA stuff. I didn't have to reach out. This was my job. I was working to try to build this company. So I got the name from James Carver, and I called him or texted him, messaged on Facebook, whatever it was. And somebody else had run this at one point, and he had just taken it over. And he goes, give me a couple weeks, give me a month, let me get everything rolling. And he goes, Chase already told me about you, and you live in Murfreesboro, so good fit, you're here, let's go get your license. And he said, just give me about a month. And so in the midst of all that, AWA crashed and crumbled, okay, sank to the bottom of the sea. We're homeless. We're just about homeless. We're broke. We had literally no money. Stormy and I, which is of course, the start of our film, which we touched on already. But nonetheless, I called James and I said I gotta come to work. And we literally had no food in the fridge. And I don't joke about that. It's not it's something I'll laugh about now, but it's not anything that was funny. And I said I really need to come to work. And he goes, all right, just come here. And we'll see what we got for you. Just come here and we'll talk. I earned my license. And I remember I came here the first day, and we joke about it. It was a big fight in the back, and a big brawl. And I remember calling Stormy, going, "I'm home. I'm home. This is it. This is my. Where are we gonna be? We're gonna work. We're gonna start back. Start up from scratch." And but the feeling here was like I was home. Like everybody was. I think my first match was against Eric Andrews. I think in this building. And from him to Derek to Plunkett to you name it, James, you know, concession girls, everybody was just they were forthcoming. You know, everybody was accommodating and. Wasn't worried about their spot. Nobody was worried about, oh, there's new guys coming in, bringing his wife, like, this is gonna be my spot. No, everyone was cool, it was a team atmosphere, and we had a lot of fun from the first night. And I knew that I belonged to him, and James took really good care of me. And the money I made here was put food in the fridge. That's not an angle, that's not a part to put myself over or put James over. It was legitimate, it was real. And had it not been for this place, and the guys here, and the weekly work, we would have went without food a lot of weeks, but it was that this place and that feeling that really kind of sparked me to get myself back in the game, you know, because I was ready to quit. I was done. I was finished. I was like, I can't have another failure. I can't, you know, have this happen again. You know, tuck the tail between my legs back to Florida. Sorry, boys, fucked up again. And I started training here. I would come here on Tuesdays and Thursdays, start working out with James Stevens, which kind of sparked me to really kind of want to train and really kind of found that I had a niche for it, and which I never knew I had. You know, I didn't know I could really love anything more than I would pop in the crowd or be in the ring, you know, as a performer, as a wrestler. And I did. I remember working with young Sean Hurley, you know, and his sister and John Hurley and Rebecca Reese and you know, a lot of other James students that were here and really seeing them develop and see where Sean's at now and where John's at now and Rebecca's at now. And then I had even a small hand in that. It means a lot to me because had it not been for that, I probably would have went off the deep end.
So at this time, it's kind of like a perfect storm because you're meeting James Carver, you're coming here to New South. You know, you're locked into your apartment in Murfreesboro. AWA is crumbling and falling apart. And then the journeyman thing happened. Like everything happened. The worst and what could possibly be the best all kind of just kind of took place all at one time.
It did, and it was kind of weird how it happened because Paul Stewart, the director of Journeyman, was somebody I knew from Florida, and I couldn't really consider him a friend at the time. He was somebody I worked with. I knew him from this company in Florida he worked there called Vintage Wrestling, and he came and he did some film for some TV, some local TV stuff we did there, and did some spots for WWE actually with Goldust. And he did some stuff with us called Wrestle Brawl. And myself and my partner at the time, Simon, had this feud, and he came up with this angle and did such good videography that it drew, you know, NXT guys to come out to watch this stuff that was on commercial that they'd seen on TV. And his work was fantastic. Well, needless to say, I had no idea he moved to Nashville. hits me up on Facebook one day and says, "Hey, I live in Nashville. I just moved here a couple weeks ago." He goes, "Let's meet up." He goes, "I kind of heard about what happened a little bit and kind of want to get your take on it. And I got an idea." And I really had no idea what he was talking about. I just knew I was broke and I couldn't go to TGI Fridays for people because I had no money. The change in my pocket, barely. So me and Stormy went and we sit down with him and he asked me how we were. I kind of laid out what had happened. And he goes, at the end of that, he goes, "Well, I want to tell your story." And I remember I laughed at him. I laughed at his face. I said, "Stormy, just, we don't have a check." I was going to say, "Get our check. We don't have one. We just have waters." I said, "Paul, I'm going to go to the bathroom, wash my hands, and get out of here." I said, "I appreciate it. Thanks." And I literally walked away, went and washed my hands, came back, sat back down. And he goes, "I was serious. He goes, I want to tell your story." I said, "What story?" I said, "We're broke. We have no money. We got nothing." I said, "Another failure. I'm a fuck up, bum. Nothing. Well, what do you want from me?" I said, "Who wants to hear that story? They want to see Rocky. They don't want to see this." And he goes, "Trust me. He goes, trust me. Give me 6 months." He goes, "If at the end of the 6 months, it's not what you want," he goes, I'll throw the flip away. He goes, we'll toss it and go our separate ways." He goes, "Trust me. Believe me when I tell you. Let me do this." And he goes, I said, "How much is it going to cost me?" In the wrestling, first words out of everybody, "How much is it going to cost me? You don't have anything to do. It's not going to cost you anything but your time and a spot in the car." He goes, "You sleep on the floor, I sleep on the floor. You sleep in a car, I'll sleep in a car. Sleep at a hotel, I'll sleep at a hotel." He goes, "I'll stay at your house some nights." He goes, "I'm going to record every aspect of your life for the next 6 months." And I looked at Stormy and she looked at me and I said, "Well, what do we got to lose? We lost everything already, so what do we have to lose? Maybe this will turn out to be something." So we did. And get through with us. And we went to throughout the Midwest, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Carolinas, here, New South, and all points in between, and he literally, you're talking hundreds of hours worth of footage between here and Florida and Carolinas, everywhere we went. And all up until, our move day, when we ended up moving back to Florida. And not to give, of course, the ending away, but obviously the ending, the movie's given away because I don't live here anymore. But, all up until that very day, he was there reporting and never faltered, he took time away from his family and his responsibility and his, job, as a director and so on to do this pro bono. Knowing full well that there was more of a chance he was wasting his money and time than the opposite. Okay, me, I was just cynical. I was like, "This is a joke. I'm gonna end up. This is another failure is gonna be under the notch's belt." So, but it turned out where, like you said, the worst turned into quite possibly one of the best. Since then, Journeyman has kind of taken on a life of its own. Just like any film, it does take a while to get something off the ground, especially when you're an independent director, an independent filmmaker, because there isn't a production budget. It was him and a camera and a slide bar and fig bars and Gatorade bottles and whatever we could muster up, and me and a camera and Stormy. That was it and our story. And with that, he took that footage back, and at the end of the 6 months, he got to work. And it really got to work, and he made magic out of this. And started out at Poe's Gym, which Poe is absolutely phenomenal. And anybody who's in the Nashville area and wants a gym to work out at, Poe's Gym is probably the best powerlifting, old school, like pipes hanging out of the ceiling, chalk everywhere, tough, badass gyms in the city. And please tell him I sent you because he's a fantastic individual. Had it not been for Poe, we probably wouldn't be sitting here because I remember Paul goes, "Hey, I need a Rocky III gym." I said, "What are you talking about?" When Apollo took Rocky, his gym in California, old school, pipes hanging out, everybody sweating, snarling, snorting, powder everywhere, but not the good powder, chalk powder. Don't get all hot. Don't call corporate. That's the kind of gym I want. So I literally got online, and within 5 minutes, I found Pose. I said, "That's our place." And we went. I called. He invited us there. We went. We looked at the place, walked in 2 seconds. I was like, "This is it. This is where we got to start." And we did. And from that point on, for the very first clip art poster design, sitting at the edge of that bench, I knew we had something special. From seeing the first clips that he sent me, I knew he had something special. It wasn't because it was mine or Stormy's, because if it was yours or Jeremiah's or James or somebody else's, I would feel the same way, because the magic that he was able to create with what we did was something I'll never be able to understand or replicate. And I owe it all to him, because I did the easy part. I just sat there and talked like I'm doing now and just do what I'm paid to do, which is wrestle and entertain. And he just sat there with the camera and then did what he was born to do, which is just create magic with. I mean, anybody can make me look good on camera. It's got to be a genius. But Journeyman has just taken on a life of its own. Global Genesis has been fantastic with getting the name out there. We just recently won, LA Film Awards Best Documentary, which was unbelievable. So it's been a really cool ride. which kind of really started like here. Like it was one of the first places we got started the whole thing. So it's cool to be back here and be able to do this.
And it really was kind of crazy how, you know, everything really came into place, because it's not like Paul didn't film you taking one shot a week at the same place. It's like everything really just it all came together. And the whole the name Journeyman, you know, is so appropriate, especially for your career, the longevity of it, and the way that everything kind of took place with the bookings and the traveling, going up the coast, down the coast, New York, back to Nashville, back to, you know, back and forth. But at the same time, you know, that love, like you were talking about for the training, all of a sudden opportunities really started to kind of pop up,
yeah,
all at this exact same time, which is so crazy because it's all caught in the film. The lowest to really the highest, you know, and so
you said it. You said perfect storm.
Yeah, and so kind of talk about how those opportunities came about, and you know, talk about what came of those.
Well, I was still working for WWE at the time, of course, for Sal Hamoy, and I was working for FIP and ACW, and had never really thought of training anybody really. I mean, I've helped out with working out with some guys, showing some things, and give some advice, feedback, but never running a wrestling school or taking on that role or position was never in a million years something I would have thought that I'd be able to do. And I remember Sal had called me, offered me the Style Battle tournament on WWN's brand. And of course I took it because Style Battle was kind of hot at that point. It was something they were trying out. And I was going to be working with Fred Yehi. Yehi, I always say his name wrong. So that was an opportunity in itself, you know, work with him. He was a fantastic talent, still is. And sorry, I grabbed that opportunity. I remember we got to Tampa and Sal wanted to sit down and talk with Stormy and I and took us for breakfast and said, hey, what would you ever think about moving back home and running the WWE training center? And I just looked at him and I said, well, I thought you already had one. And it was run by prior to this, it was run by Bag of Shit Earl Cooter, was by Brian Iles. Terrible. And I don't know how anybody would want to get trained by a guy. It's a shoot interview. I can say whatever I want. Too bad of shit with eyes. But nonetheless, I thought, I had no idea that had gone away. You know, I figured they still had it, but they didn't. And he was asking me, and Sal doesn't ask anybody for anything. He never, unless he's serious, he doesn't, not gonna waste his time or yours. And so I kind of came away with, you know, the idea of, you know, this might actually happen. Maybe he wants me to really run this wrestling school. Well, like anything else in wrestling, I leave, I do Style Battle, I leave, I go. Come back to work at FIP the very next month. And I'm sitting upstairs, and he calls me the crow's nest upstairs in New York City. And he goes, hey, did you give any more thought to running the wrestling school, the WWE training center? And I said, so you were really serious about that? He goes, Mike, I need you here in 30 days. We're opening the doors. I need you here. I was with you and Matt Sydal. And I remember going upstairs, texting Stormy, because she was on the other side of the crow's nest. And I said, hey, I'm getting ready to go to the ring. I said, we got to find a house. We're moving to Florida. She was like, wait, what? I said, got to go. The next thing you know, my music hits, so I go to the ring. And I could see her standing up at the crow's nest, like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, I go to the ring, do my thing, come back. And we got in the car that night, and she goes, well, hold on, are you serious? Like, he wants his new home? What are we going to do? We don't have any money. You know, so I said, well, we got to do this. This got another opportunity. You know, here we go, another opportunity. You know, but, you know, I knew that, I know Sal's reputation. I've been well-versed in the WWN brand. It's been around for a long time. Hell, Sal and Gabe, Sal and Boy and Gabe Sapolsky helped start Ring of Honor. You know, and then when they split off from Ring of Honor, of course, that's where Evolve came from. And was the birth child of Brian Danielson, believe it or not, and Evolve name and so on, which a lot of people don't know that. So I knew that the company wasn't going anywhere, and I knew what Sal's vision was, and I've been working with him for many years. And me and Stormy kind of sat down with her parents and made the decision to move home and, you know, told them where our goals were. Scariest thing in my life, because here I am taking their daughter yet again on another roller coaster ride, back home from Warren Boots, borrowing money to move in the first place. It was a big risk that we took to move home. But it worked out, you know, and WWE Training Center is revered right now as one of the biggest wrestling schools in the country. We've got a direct pipeline with NXT, a great working relationship with Dave Sapolsky and Evolve and Hunter himself, and just the whole NXT program and the WWE machine, being a part of that, even a small part of that, is phenomenal. And being able to train tomorrow's stars, because, I mean, you know, as much as you like to think, we're not Superman, we can't do this forever, and eventually we've got to kind of hang our boots up, and if I can leave the business just a little bit better than the way I found it, even if it's through one student or one training, in one way, shape, or form, whether it's wrestling, refereeing, managing, ballet, production, doesn't make a difference. If I can make that difference with just one person, then I did my job. And, you know, we use a term in WWE called cultivating talent. And as a term, of course, you know, we stole from Triple H, and it's what we do here is cultivate talent. And so I try to, you know, emulate that every day at the training center, is to take the opportunity that I was given and pass along the knowledge that I was fortunate enough to have from Adrian Street and Bill DeMott and Jim Taylor, and now working alongside with, you know, luckily be able to work alongside Norman Smiley and William Regal and Coach Brookside, and it is phenomenal. And I'm learning myself day in and day out. I mean, it's as much as I'm training all the kids, and I call them, they're grown adults, but they're my kids, as much as I'm teaching them, I'm learning, you know. I'm learning from the best of the best of the best to become a better trainer, to train tomorrow's stars, because that's what, you know, there's no such thing as bad wrestlers or bad performers or bad trainers, bad coaches. And if I can take one person and make them better, then I've done my job. So I feel like I'm fortunate, and everything kind of, like you said earlier, everything kind of came around and came full circle, and the perfect storm to build to where we are now. And things are going phenomenal. You know, Journeyman is doing great. Training center is doing great. You know, I got my 16th tag team partner. That's like the presidency. I got 16th tag team partner. I wish we had Ballard Bills. Jeremiah Plunkett, we call the Journeyman. Pardon the pun. Hashtag believe it or not. You know, which kind of came about as a kind of an inside rib of him and I one night when Chase Stevens, of all people, was running a locker room when James Carr was indisposed, and all of a sudden we're like the biggest baby faces in the damn Mid-South, and I never in a million years, it's like a parallel universe. But it's, you know, we've had a lot of help with groups like WrestleTopia and you know, the New South group, and everybody's just been phenomenal. I mean, it was, hell, WrestleTopia is, you know, and I'm getting, you're behind the camera, so I'm not putting you over saying anything I wouldn't say to your face. You had a hand in building that whole first world premiere, you know, red carpet premiere here in Hermitage in Nashville, and really put us on the map, you know, with Journeyman, and that kind of gave us the ball rolling for other places like Indiana and so on. So everything's kind of, like you said earlier, everything kind of snowballed into each other while everything was going to hell in a handbasket. Behind the scenes, there was like these, I imagine these little elves, and they're like working, like making little things, making little shows. Not elves like Shooter Storm, he's like, I wish was dead. But you're, you know, building this little empire that we have, which, you know, here we are, and it's, we're having a lot of fun doing it. And, you know, who knows? It could be here today, gone tomorrow, so we just enjoy it while we got it.
So let's talk about Ring Warriors.
We have to?
Yeah. This is your, am I correct? This is the second go around?
This second. This is like season 42. There's been so many incarnations of Ring Warriors. And you know, talk about something again that really missed the boat. I mean, it's like I start to think about this, and I feel like I get a brain aneurysm over here, and then I start thinking about it, and I get a brain aneurysm over here. Again, you have, how many times can you have these opportunities? How many times can you have these golden gooses handed to you? Like Midas, is it a Midas touch? You know, whatever the opposite of Midas would be, that's what this would be. It's like, you know, we'll say Midas backwards, see them, you know, it's like, you know, and it's not for a lack of trying, for Christ's sake. I mean, it was like, literally, we joke, there's like season 8, you know, like we joke, me and Bruce Santee, bless his heart, you know, every couple months he'll text me, are you ready for season 37? And just keep going up every year. It's like the ladder, when Bobby Heenan, God rest his soul, we'll talk about ladder matches, the ladder was like 72 feet tall by the end of the thing. So, you know, we're like season 762 at Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Ring South, Ring Warriors. But, it, you know, it started out, of course, anybody who does their research, you know, it started out, Power Brody, Hiro Matsuda, God rest his soul, and Hulk Hogan. Those were the three that were supposed to start. Essentially started Ring Warriors. Of course, Hogan peeled off, did his own thing. Might have went to WCW at the time. Of course, you know, Hiro Matsuda passed away, so it left Howard Brody, a.k.a. I like to call him the Mush. I love Howard Brody. He was the Mush, you know, with Ring Warriors and his soon-to-be partner, business partner, Larry Brannon, a.k.a. Vito DiNucci, one half of the New Heavenly Bodies with Chris Nelson. And both of those guys I came up working for Howard Brody against him and with him, part of the NWA, and he was former NWA president. And then, of course, you know, Vito DiNucci, the guy I came up with and wrestled with and against, and then worked for the Ring Warriors. And very, very smart individuals as people, very smart men, very smart business-wise as far as the wrestling business, very good minds. But for some reason that didn't, none of that equated to a success of Ring Warriors. Why? I've got my opinions. There was a lot of money wasted. There was a lot of mistakes made. You know, with the ones that we did in Florida, we went for the PBS studios. which I was talking about earlier, and I money wasted. I mean, the place is enormous. You know, it was money wasted there, and then money wasted on fly-ins. I mean, money wasted on venues, money wasted on talent coming in. Who knows? I mean, I could literally go on and on about the things that went wrong. It wasn't for lack of talent, because there was a ton of talent there.
Except for Jeremiah Plunkett.
I tried. He wasn't really well known at the time. He was a green kid, like he was like the young Tim Horner. He was blue lightning. He wasn't white lightning. Blue lightning.
Miss out on all the great opportunities.
But it's crazy because you think of the talent pool that was there. It was fantastic. Yet early days was Adam Pearce, was Steve Corino, was Scoot Andrews, the Fives. I mean, it was ridiculous the amount of talent that was there. I had to mention my own name in that talent pool. And then of course, we had the birthing, because when I think of birthing, I think of stuffing a watermelon through a pee hole, right? Birthing. That's what I think of the same thing. It's like birthing. It's like and it gets better and then it gets better, and you feel like you're gonna die and it pops out. Right? That's what I felt like. It was like that from day one. Vito Grasso, who, Big Pete, my brother from another mother, big fat Pete Cannon, love Pete to death. He's my partner, terrible wrestler, but I love him to death. He's one of my best friends in the entire world. And then we had AJ Genazzo, who by himself was a decent hand, but I don't think he ever really had the heart to do this. I think he had a lot of skill and he had a lot of talent, but you have to have a here and here in order to do this at a higher level. And I don't think he ever was really set out to do this at a higher level. I think he was meant to do it at an indie level. And that was fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But you can't take someone who's in that indie mindset and make them believe that he's going to be larger than life, because you've got to actually believe it here and here. And if you don't, you're only going to go so far. Vito Legrasso, who was really always about Vito. He was never about anything but Vito. Always has been, always will be. Which is ultimately why his demise ended up the way it was. And he was a fantastic worker in the ring. I mean, nobody takes away anything from him in-ring-wise. He was one of the best that I've seen in the ring. Unfortunately, his ego and his inability to rise above anything but himself and put the show first. The one thing that I've always prided myself on, and I like to say always, probably for the last 15 years, is putting the show first, putting my partners first, putting other people first, because that's what this business is about. It's about building others, because you can't last forever, so you got to build others to take your place when you move on. Okay? And unfortunately, there was a lot of that not going on, within the Slambinos, which is ultimately why we ended up where we ended up. Along the same lines, Ring Warriors, there was a lot of mistakes made. There was a lot of people brought in that weren't needed, a lot of money spent that wasn't needed. Again, starting and stopping. We did PBS in Miami, and then we did like two or three tapings in Miami, spent tons of money. I mean, talking 100 grand probably spent, blown, gone, goodbye. Tampa, same thing. Venue was kind of passe. It wasn't really up to Ring Warrior standards and what they really wanted for Ring Warriors. And you could see it on camera. You could tell they were scaling it back because they really didn't have a whole lot of money. And then at that point, I thought we were done. Goodbye. No more Ring Warriors. Fast forward a couple of years. I'm in Louisiana for Mania, morethanmania.com, WWN's week-long WrestleMania celebration. I'm horrible at commercial now. Morethanmania.com. Down in Louisiana for Mania a couple years back, and I got a text from Larry Brandon. He goes, hey, he always calls me kid, even though we're within like 3 years of each other, 4 years of each other. Hey, kid, we're getting ready to start up again. And the hair on the back of my neck stood up. And I was in a really good mood, and I was like, yeah, woo! I sent him back Slambinos or something like that. Okay? Never really thinking anything was going to happen. Next thing you know, I start getting phone calls, emails about, hey, we want to make you an agent, we want to put you in the ring, blah, blah. Hey, Howard Brody calls me, how about Vito? I said, fuck Vito. Fuck Vito, his horse he rode in on, fuck his ugly wife, fuck him, fuck his sister. Fuck all of them. It's either him or me. I don't want nothing to do with him. I'm either going to have fun doing this or I don't want to do it all. And so Howard was like, all right, that's fine. You don't have to do it. You don't have to thank you. I do a really good Howard Brody impression. But he called me like six times. And every time he called me, it was sliding Vito in some way. Well, maybe we do like a radio, via satellite. No, absolutely not. It's either me or him. I'm not, no, at all. We don't like each other. It's not going to work. It's either him or me. So of course they chose me, so we went to Vegas and we got all the stuff out of the old travel, and all of a sudden we got the call. The Howard goes, hey, what'd you think about Disco? I said, Inferno? He said, yeah, so I love Glenn. Glenn Gilbert is fantastic. You know, I've always been a big fan of his work. We met a couple times and worked with each other a couple times. So I knew that, I had a feeling that we would click. I knew him and I did. And him and Janazzo would click. And we did. From the second we met and started talking, I knew we had a hit. We really did. And so for the first time in season 378, I think we had a hit. Like we had our group, we had our trio, right? And it's all we needed. Glenn, Janazzo, and Chiazzo. Bam, we got it. Slambinos, right? And we were off and running. And we did the vignettes, and we did the one was by accident, and we, you know, we did the one in the parking garage because we actually lost the car, and so we ended up cutting this vignette, you know, on accident, and it was a hit. And all of a sudden, I start getting calls from, you know, Steve Carino, this guy, yeah, I'm like, oh, hey, we're watching, you know, we might steal you guys in a year, you know, making jokes and that, yeah, but something, and maybe we'll actually do something, me and Janazzo. Maybe this will actually work, you know, and we got in really good shape. Well, initially, we came in fat, according to Howard.
You guys are a little bloated on TV. You know, you guys got to be in TV shape.
Yeah. Thanks, Howard. Thank you. Thanks for the vote of workout confidence. Nonetheless, we did. We came in bloated. Nonetheless, we got back in shape with the second tape. We came in literally like a Vaseline-coated ninja. Ran right through everybody. We got a blast. But we were a hit. And we weren't really trying. I didn't even think we hit our stride yet. Like, we were really creative with a lot of the stuff that we were doing. Had a lot of help back home from this guy JoJo, Villanueva, in Atlanta, and we were very creative with some of the stuff we did, and we were having fun, and I think that's where the key was. We were having a blast, and Glenn was such a fantastic
perfect.
Additive. Yeah, what's that?
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Absolute perfect in every aspect, and no ego, no ego. It's all business. He'd show up, work. See you guys tomorrow, and he'd go off to the strip club wherever he worked. He was the head manager or whatever strip club in Vegas, right? And we were in Vegas, for God's sake. We were in Vegas, taping TV. You know, we get the WGN deal, and I'm like, this is it. All of a sudden, my movie's getting aired on WGN, the commercials on WGN. I'm going, ah! WGN and TBS, those are the super stations. They don't get bigger than that, right? Well, of course, Global Genesis is involved, and there's a lot of, you know, stuff that we didn't know. There's a lot of politics involved with TV and ads and commercials and all this stuff and that, and money and millions and thousands of dollars. And I wouldn't get any of it. But nonetheless, there's a lot of money involved. And when there's money involved, evil things happen. Bad things happen. Bad decisions get made. And there was a lot of hands in the pot. A lot of things that people that should have been running things that weren't. People are paying attention to things that shouldn't have been. People that are on the show that shouldn't have been. When I went back and watched the tapes and watched some of the shows.
Other
itself,
than your vignettes, everything was horrible.
Oh, I was trying not to say it, but I remember sitting there, bless his heart, Tony Mamaluke, I love him to death. I'm sitting there in Brooklyn with him, first show, and he literally took his remote and he threw it at me. And he goes, this is crap. And his voice went real high. He goes, this is crap. And he threw it at me. He goes, never watch this again. So I record, when he walked away, I made sure to record every fucking episode of his thing. But it wasn't good. And it's, I'm looking at this stuff and I'd have to review the shows every week. And I felt myself really trying to find some really good things, you know, and not putting them over because they're my friends, but the hot shots, you know, I would say what you want about Chase and partying lifestyle and this and that, but the guy can go. Cassie Riley can go. These guys are 20 years older than these young guys that were on the show, and they can't hold a candle, these guys, ourselves included.
And they shot it all. You know, like, they shot all the bad work, and they shot the bad shots. Yeah. And
The one that rings to my mind is it was a girls' match, and I can't remember who it was, but I remember they had...
Santana Garrett.
It was Santana, and I love Santana to death.
It was whoever she was.
I don't know who the girl was, bigger girl, but I remember she had a girl on her shoulders, and... they were chasing the referee. It reminded me of, like, Clockwork Orange, like when they're running around with a gimmick, like DiZildo.
Yeah.
Like, big ceramic gimmick. That's what it reminded me of. The poor referee gets headbutted by the girl.
And they shot the whole thing. They showed
it was
everything.
Like Bushwhacker's battering ram, but on the shoulder. It was very bad. And they didn't edit it out. And I wondered to myself, why? Why didn't they do that? And you got guys that are legitimate. I mean, you got Jared Ganim, who's a fantastic producer director. David Marquez. Hollywood, end of way Hollywood, wherever it is, you know, Hollywood in California, you know, the show was running forever. You know, so you got people who were legitimate TV people that were running the truck. Why did this stuff get edited out? I don't know. I wish I had people ask me that question all the time. I don't know. I didn't run the truck. I wish I did. I would have taken the whole tape and I would have threw it in the sea, even though we were pretty far from the ocean.
But hopefully next season, everything will be
season
cleared
428,
up.
Season 428, we're coming back. And, he knows the wheelchair.
JP,
the wheelchair.
Maybe?
Yep, he'll be there. He's going to be the first Irish, Jewish, American, German, Amish Italian Slamino. So it's we're at season 621. We're moving yet on a horse. No electricity. I look back on it. I was watching the matches the other day because I got access to everything still. And so anybody wants to buy those, just let me know. WrestleTopia.com. Talk to me after I'm back. When I look back on it, I look at the potential that we did have. All kidding aside, there was a ton of potential there. There was a lot of talent. You know, Luke Hawks, and you got guys on that show that were just phenomenal athletes, phenomenal workers, wrestlers, Cahagas, and Michael Tarver, and you know, it's just great talent. And unfortunately, the mistakes that happened weren't the wrestlers' fault. It was the guys that were running it, and the mistakes that were made were politic wise and TV guy wise, and that's something out of our control. You know, but we had fun. I made good money. I went to Vegas twice, Grand Canyon twice. Went to all these things with my wife and had a blast in Vegas. And I can't really say anything bad about our trips out there. I had a blast. Got paid decent. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things where you look back and you go, man, if you guys would have just listened, if you guys would have just tweaked it here or didn't spend so much here or spent more here, we might be AEW right now. And God bless those guys because they're doing something that nobody's been able to do for a very, very, very long time. And again, not to sound like a fan, but I wish them all luck in the world because, again, they're doing something that no one has been able to do, in, 30 years?
Yeah.
25 years, and that's impact withstanding. Nobody's been able to even come close to competing with anything that Vince is doing. So to be able to even be considered in that realm is, that in itself is a win, as far as I'm concerned.
So, I mean, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, it's the best time to be a wrestler, the best time to be in the business, whether you're production, wrestler, referee, ballet, manager, fan.
Opportunity.
Opportunity is all, we say opportunity knocks, and it's all over the place right now. It's it doesn't matter where you are. You can make a living on the independents. You don't have to work for Vince, and that's not saying you shouldn't or want to get there, but you don't have to. Used to be back in the day, it was WWE, WCW, or Japan. WCW went away, it was WWE and Japan, if you got yourself there. Now it's... there's a lot of places. Now it's just not big companies. Now you can work a league. You can work a territory area. You can work Texas. You can work the Southeast, the Northeast, the Midwest, California. You can work these areas and get by and do okay. And, you're going to drive a Cadillac, but you'll do okay. And it's the first time since, Smoky Mountain, closed down. What was that, mid-90s? Since that's even been a possibility, it's amazing time. Absolutely amazing time.
So let's finish up. So give a last word on Ron Neamey.
Human fucking tripod. Ron Neamey is the guy that whenever I do an interview or podcast or anything at all, if it was no Ron Neamey, there'd be no Francisco Chiazzo. Of course, everybody knows me as Frankie Capone prior to that. I'll tell a story and then we'll close up with that. I remember I bugged Ron. I'll show my age. It was when AOL had that burp. You start the AOL messenger and you would wait for the messenger to come up and see who was online so you could talk to them, right? I would go to my friend Chris Carson's house because he was the only one to internet because I was poor. I didn't have shit. Right, so I'd go to his house and I'd wait. I would sit in his house. He'd be like, you can't stay here all day. I was like, Ron Neamey's going to be online. He's going to be online eventually. He's got to be. And sure enough, he would get out and see Ron Neamey pop. It was Hardcore Giant, all one word. And I would ding, and it would come up as Chris Carson, of course. And he always would shit on Chris. And I would, hey, it's Frankie Capone from CCW, Bill Weaver, hey. And he wouldn't reply. He would just let it sit there like an asshole. And he would kayfabe me forever. And then finally, I would see him at CCW shows in Melbourne, on the east coast of Florida. And he would show up at Shane Twins at Jaguar. And I would, stand there like a cheese line and wait to shake his hand like it was a godfather, kiss the ring. And he'd walk right past me. You fucking dick. But I wanted to get on shows because that was, IPW was the thing. Anybody was tape trading, if you were tape trading, or IPW was Fat Frank and JPW. It was Ron Neamey at IPW. And you had Bill Behrens, in Atlanta. And you had these select guys that were running these areas, right? And then, you had FOW down in Miami. So, Ron was one of the guys. He ran Florida. So if you were going to get and break out of Florida, you had to go through Ron. It was just the way it was. So I knew that, and I wanted to get there. So I was after him, and after him. It was CCW or online. And I was stalking him. I was like, I'm going to get this son of a bitch on the phone. I'm going to get him on the phone. Finally, I'm sitting on the toilet of my fiance at the time, my ex. And all of a sudden, phone rings at the house. I pick it up. And I was like, hello? Hey, Ron Neamey. Frankie Capone. Ron, I'm so glad to hear that. We ain't got time for that shit. Crystal River, June 10th. You and Jeremy Lopez. Pay's going to be $50. Ron, thank you so much. Click. And I remember I dropped the phone. I didn't even wipe. I jumped up and ran. And my wife was like, my fiance at the time was like, what are you doing? I was like, Rodney, we just called him on IPW. Ah! She didn't give two shits. She didn't know what IPW was. She didn't care. She didn't know what Rodney was. I was excited because I was going, to me, I knew that that was my stepping stone to get the bigger, better thing. Whatever that was, I didn't even know, but whatever it was, that's how I had to get there. And Ron was the guy, and it was he took a lot of chances on me. To this day, I mean, he'll show me more than he probably should, but it's always been me and him, and we joke about Team Over and 911 Incorporated. And, he had a lot of hand in building a lot of careers. You know, you see Roderick Strong in NXT, he came through Ron. You know, you see MVP, he came through Ron. You know, you see Shane Twins, they came through Ron. You know, guys like David Young, you know, Christopher Daniels, I mean, you name it, they were coming through IPW. And you know, when you got a guy like AJ Styles, who also came through Ron, through Bill Barons, you know, was sleeping on Ron's couch back in the day, and Luke Hawks, and you got all these guys, phenomenal athletes and talents that are out there today making real money and as stars. They came through Ron, and Ron had a hand in their careers, including mine. You know, again, if there was no Ron, there'd be no me. And you know, Puerto Rico and England, China, all these places. But more importantly, he was one of my best friends. He was like my brother. And hell, he was at my wedding. You know, I wanted to throw him overboard half the time. But I love him to death. And it's, you know, there's never been a guy that loves and has more passion about this business than he does that I've seen. And again, you know, I've learned a lot from him, good and bad. Not just about the wrestling business, but life in general. So he's definitely the guy that if I had to say there was I owe everything to, it'd be him.
So put over your social media?
Yes, Francisco Chiazzo, Facebook, Francisco Chiazzo at Twitter, Francisco Chiazzo at Instagram, and I think I'm probably the only straight man, don't call corporate, don't get hot, Effie, the only straight man that has a Pinterest, because I know Effie probably has several Pinterests. You could also reach my beautiful, lovely bride, my better half, not Jeremiah Plunkett, Stormy Lee. Stormy Lee at Facebook, Stormy Lee 327 at Twitter, Stormy Lee 327 Gmail or Instagram, and then I think she has a Pinterest too, but I'm not sure if she's straight or not. She might have would be a little flim-flam.
Journeyman on Facebook.
Journeyman, yep, thank you. I'm glad Team Journeyman is in the house, because thank God. Journeyman Film at Facebook, and of course, follow our friends 316 Productions, WrestleTopia, and Global Genesis Group, because if it wasn't for those folks, there would be no Journeyman, because trust me, these guys have had to put up with my shit for 3 years plus, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to do this stuff on my own. So I'm really thankful for them and WrestleTopia especially, because, I mean, hell, again, if you're able to make me look good on camera, you're a fucking genius. Right. And close. Bam! Woo! $1 million.
JP, you want to come up here?
$1 million. $1 million right there. We're making a million.
What do we think of each other? What do we think of each other? What does JP think of?
What does Frankie think of JP?
You're shit. I love when people call me and ask me what the deal was. Hey, Frankie, what's the deal with the blah, 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 blah?
Right now, I think Frankie's a bit of shit because he's more comfortable chair.
Fuck, I'll let you have a picture. Why does it say grandma?
That's what
you just now notice that?
That's your special chair, the grandma chair.
I can have grandpa?
Chris, nope. Fuck.
Nope, that's why I sell it.
Like beautiful. Who would have known that right. Later.
All right. You jabronis, sit down. Get you both in frame.
Your ass is sweaty.
Yeah.
All right, so Journeyman, the shoot. Take one.
Oh, okay. I thought that meant
Journeyman.
Yeah. I'd lose it.
So, Francisco.
Oh, yes.
Why don't you start off and when did you first meet this fine young man, Jeremiah?
Well, funny thing was, we were promoting stupid AWA around Kentucky. I remember going to some convenience store and I remember seeing a poster which I pulled down and put ours up. But it was Jeremiah Plunkett and Mr. I think it was Mr. USA on top. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I remember hearing Jeremiah's name, like, with the carnies and stuff when I was in Florida. There's certain guys, and I said this to them today, there's certain guys that you hear over and over and over again. So you know that they're either worth the shit or they're shit. There's no very little in between.
Right.
There's very little in between. I keep dropping this fucking bottle of water. So I'm just going to leave it down there before I hurt myself again. So I used to do the shit or good. So there's no in between. So, and then we would go to the town again, like the next week or next month, and the same poster would be up. I'd pull it down again, put it on one of ours. And
that shows they weren't updating the posters.
Nope, not at all. Nope. So, but and then when I came here, I finally got a chance to meet him, and you know, just that what I had read online and stuff. You can always tell when I see houses and I hear that they drew a packed house for a cage match or whatever. Like it's. You don't hear things drawing anymore in the Indies. Like, very specifically, that match drew. Like, you don't hear that anymore. So the show draws, or it's good just because it's been built over time, but that match drew. Like, the cage match they did and built to, they drew. Like, what they did drew. They did their jobs, and it drew the house. I mean, it's something you don't hear about very often, or really at all anymore. So that really intrigued me. So, and I didn't know Mr. USA was, I didn't know that was him. Sorry.
Kayfabe.
Why am I talking on the other side of my hand? But I was, and then I, of course, I got to meet James, and I had no idea the first time. I was like a freaking idiot. I didn't know that was him until I saw him getting drunk. I was like, wait, that's, hold up. That's of Christmas, like it was Santa Claus, you know, just minus the fat or presents, you know, or real fun time at all. But nonetheless, but I knew Jeremiah was a professional from the second we tagged together, and consequently, it was like 2 years ago, it was in that corner. And he reached into his gear, and he pulled out a Phantom gimmick, and gave him the Schnabitz, and then put the Phantom gimmick back in his gimmick, and tagged me. And I was like, I fell in love. I had a man crush. I was like, I love him. I'm gonna be a world tag team champion of the universe with him in 3 years. And here we are. But he was a pro, and I could tell he was a pro, and not just because of the way he worked, but because he showed up. He didn't go over all his shit. He showed up. He was grizzled, miserable, like I was. And he was younger, which is even better. I was like, a lot younger. He lets me know every day. And I was like, he's a pro. And I was like, I like this guy. And then I would watch him. I watch him work, and I watch him leave and come back and be gone for like 3 months, and then he'd come back. Hey, when do you come back? I don't fucking know. Whenever he brings me back, I don't know. You know, come up with his dumb tie-dye shirt, his short shorts, horrible dressing, but it worked. Like, it works for him, and he's a good worker, and he's a good hand. He's a pro. Like, there's very few guys that I can look at and just go, they're a pro. 100%. From his cowboy boots to the way he works, to the Phantom Schnabitz, the whole nine yards. It just works. And it's him, you know, guys like Derek Neal, like, they're all in the same, like, linear universe of just, they're pros. And they're wrestlers. If I had a lineup guys, like a lineup of guys that go, wrestlers, I would just go, that's what wrestlers look like. That's what you're supposed to look like. Go do what they're doing, times 10. So.
Jeremiah.
You're the only one who's called me out on my short shorts.
I saw their coach shorts.
Everyone else just like never says a word about them.
I popped them because they were cute. Really high and you know, really low socks. And I'm like, this guy is like, he's old.
It's all leg,
he's young old. He's like 70, but he's not.
Before you fell in love with Frankie, what was your thoughts? Before you actually met Francisco, everyone's heard of Francisco because if you're on Facebook, if you're online, Francisco was posting nonstop, constantly tagging everyone.
Well, we weren't friends 6 a.m. online then.
Oh, you weren't. Yeah, you didn't see the 6 a.m. two cups coffee to the gym.
Romance.
It's a battle. Then Tracy says it's a battle.
Everything
then, you
he
know.
Does.
Two cups.
So the first time that you tagged with him, was that the first time that you had ever met Frankie?
I don't think he remembers this one actually, and it's funny because you may have tore down the poster you ended up being on the show at.
Probably.
It was Carthage, Tennessee. You were working for James, and I wrestled Mr. USA, not on top that night, because that's the night Chase and Chris went an hour and then cut a 20-minute promo afterward.
There was a string of those.
I remember that specifically. That was the first one of many.
That was the first time we met. However,
that's crazy.
I approached you. We talked.
Yeah, we said hi.
Yep. That was it. I didn't know how fucking funny you were, because I guess you didn't know a lot of the guys on the card. I mean, when you were some, so you weren't your this guy.
I was very quiet.
And, like, that's what, me and Buzz were both there.
Yeah.
That was when some wrestlers drink, okay? Buzz had brought some Crown Apple for the boys to enjoy. We come back from our match, and Chase says, drink every bit of the Crown, the whole thing, gone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, see, now you
drunk Irishman, his face was red, and his belly was out here. over his gimmick. And I'm like, Chase is always in shape. He's always in shape. He was out of shape. He's better. Is in shape.
Right.
And his freaking gimmick, he looked pregnant. It was over his thing. And I know he's drunk. It was all round shouldered. I was like, he's fucked. And I've never seen Chase drunk before like that. Never.
So yeah, we didn't know. So like, I remember me and Buzz leaving going, hey, that Frankie guy is nice. Didn't really say a lot.
Mm-mm, not one bit.
And then I think after that, the next time I ran into him was here. We randomly tagged Phantom Snave. It's been friends ever since.
Balls in the face spot.
Oh, like, fucking yeah, beautiful. A total accident. Balls in the face spot, but you still pop for it.
Yeah. And I called him. I was like, he's like, my first time I ever saw anybody who was Phantom, it was Jerry Lawler. You know, and of course, as a kid, you don't know what's Phantom. So you get older and you watch and you realize what you're doing and watch him do it. And I'd never seen anybody do it until him. Until Jeremiah. So it's like I saw Jerry Lawler do it, but I never seen anybody do it on the indies because everybody's too cool. They'd rather flip, you know, point the gun and go like this or smack their leg or, you know, go like, ah, there's my finish name and you know it's coming. They'd do all that stuff instead of paying a Phantom gimmick, kabang, put it behind, and all behind the referee's back too. So it was like the whole Phantom thing was behind the whole thing was just beautiful. It was like just magic. And I just stood there like this and watching it, just going, and hearts were like coming up in the ring. I was like, whoa! You know, but
you say I'm like cool. I have dragon pants on a tie-dye shirt.
Well, with the dragon pants. I got New Balance shoes on.
Yeah, New Balance shoes with those stretchy.
New Balance. Who still wears New Balance?
70-year-old men.
Free.
And Jeremiah.
Free.
Well, and there you go. Old Jewish men. Jeremiah's name is Jewish.
So talk about.
I had to wear any New Balance.
Journeyman. Because Janaza was supposed to be here. Right? I mean, that was the Slambino's debut.
That was actually that night.
That night. That was the reason why.
Yep. Did he come before that and cut promos?
We went to Chicago. And he said, James goes, hey, stop here. We can't put you on the car because we're not ready yet. He goes, but you're going to be driving by here. Stop. We'll cut some promos. Get some stuff in the can. Pictures, everything. Bring your stuff. And we're going to Chicago anyway for a show. So we had everything with us. Came here and cut about 4 weeks worth of promos in the can. Everything.
They're up, too. Like, they're there. Yeah.
Everything's there.
Yeah.
And you have to wear your sweet pants that you love
wearing. Yep, I hate that fucking outfit.
When are we going to change that up?
Never, ever, ever, ever. I think I threw it away. I'm going to put it in a fucking archive and never do this again.
Sorry, I can go get us some dress
pants. Oh, fuck. I'm going to put that right next to Howard Brody's book, Living with the Sharks. Living with the Sharks. But it was funny because that was the night. That was the night we were supposed to debut. And I remember coming up here and we had no... I remember James telling me, you're going to work... what are the names? Singles, Jason Kane and
Chris Phoenix.
The Memphis Kings.
Memphis Kings. And we worked them singles, and I'm just like, you know, I just didn't want to work singles. I was like, fuck. I was in a tag team mood. So we get here.
Not only that, they were the tag champs.
They were
the
tag champs. Yeah. So it was kind of like the story was it was supposed to be in Janaza working them singles. That breaks down, you see where that story goes. So anyhow, we'll be in Plunkett for Slambino's. So it was like, well, what the fuck are we going to do? What's the point? So Chase is running the locker room because James was on vacation in his mind. And leave it at that.
That was a crazy night. That was a crazy night.
Chase comes in with the
He worked the main event that night, right? That was the night that
he did work the main event.
Yes,
if
okay.
If he was awake, I think he might have been awake for that. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, Chase comes up with the run sheet, which is really James' iPad, which is really just a yellow pad. Right? And he comes in, and me and Plunkett just meet Chase, and we go, hey, we got this idea. You know, and Plunkett goes, hey, what would we tag? And we gave this big idea, and I remember Chase going, yeah, what you guys want to do? Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah, fine. I mean, that's fine. Whatever, it is what it is. Thanks, Chase. Good man. High five. Woo! He didn't actually high five either of us. Put our hands up and just walked away. But nonetheless, we go out and we do this very simple Memphis-y tag where we just did a bunch of tags in and out.
And I want to point out something, too. You were over, but like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you were over, and I was like, they're not going to accept me as a babyface. It's like, we had literally done like a half turn the week before with me and Derek, and they weren't sure about it.
Yeah, nope. Yeah.
So,
me and like, Stormy, a couple weeks before that, did like a promo where we talked about Journey and stuff, but it was,
we had no idea
we were walking into.
Yeah. Because, I don't think you had been back a week before or something like that. Nope. Yeah. So we had no idea
luckily, anyone that's watching this can go back on WrestleTopia TV on YouTube and follow along. The entire thing and the confusion leading up.
We came through that curtain and the crowd went nuts and then you see it and it was real, it was organic.
And we just
turned and looked and smiled and mouthed, what the fuck? And we just, we just
went. Oh, I didn't mouth it. I kept finding him going, what the fuck is
whose idea was it for the, I mean, it all, again, perfect storm.
We
right? Perfect storm.
We just did it. We just went out and walked. And he went one way, I went the other. And then we Top Gun high-fived.
But what about the song?
Oh, that didn't happen the first time.
Yeah, that didn't happen
the first
time.
Oh, it didn't.
I don't know what we came out to.
Oh, your music.
I do.
Dun, dun. Because I remember I came out and did this.
That's right. You were doing the Tracy Smothers coming out. Oh, that's beautiful. I forgot that.
No, the song.
He came up with the song.
Yeah,
I was driving somewhere at like 4 in the morning. He goes, hey, you're probably, he always starts off with, you're probably going to say no and hate it. You're probably going
to
say no.
Because I'm doing things to entertain myself.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I played the song while I was driving at 4 in the morning. Fucking pop, the Texas Longhorn signs in the car. And he goes, wait, you like it? I was like, yes, fuck it, we got to do it. And then we were off and running.
And so, yeah, and it plays the first time. And at first, people don't know because they've never heard it, right? And I'm like, we finally killed it.
Because
this whole
dead.
Thing was a rib.
It wasn't supposed to happen.
And I'm like, we finally killed it. And then about halfway after the first verse, I start hearing a couple voices singing it, and then I hear more than a couple voices singing it, and I'm like, Frankie, they're singing it.
As we're behind the curtain.
Yeah, going, this is happening right there.
They're singing it. Are they really singing it? No, they can't be singing it. They're singing it.
And so, we're of course, we're going to come out at Ready or Not, and we come out, and it's like, Ready or Not? We're like,
and they came alive. A true test was hard. Like, we were, that's what James, I remember James called me, and he goes, you guys were over in Harden, and this might work. You know, and Harden was... Harden's a little difficult, a little different crowd.
Yeah,
and
we, yeah.
You know, they're
well, the last time we they seen us too.
Yeah, we're fuckheads.
Right.
So you know, we get behind the curtain and
guess they're all watching on WrestleTopia TV. Yeah.
But now they are. They are all watching on WrestleTopia TV.
Music hits and the crowd. They don't know what they still know what to make of it. So they're not quite singing yet. And then the thing hits and we come out and he launches off the fucking steps.
Yeah, because I'm trying to miss that step.
I was like, oh shit! And he went and I was like, I'm not doing that. And I kind of hopped down and he just fucking one finger in the air and the crowd came alive. And I was like, oh, well, fuck this.
I'm not gonna launch anymore. Last time I did that without you there, I was grab away. I ate shit. It was bad. It hurt so bad.
That damn turf monster came up and did that.
Who had the coats in the car?
Actually, funny story. He had his black coat, you had your black one, right? That
yep.
night. And
oh, I had both of them. I had my blue because when we took the impromptu pictures,
yep. He gave me his black one. He wore the blue one, and because I had my leather, so we tried to match a little bit.
Uh huh.
And here we go. And that was it. Because you see, there's a picture that you
took. We still don't have matching gear.
Not yet. It's okay. It's all right.
I can't get the gear I ordered 4 months ago, Coy Phillips. Anyway.
Oh, I figured you got it from Jack Gordon.
Oh.
But I get mine from Koi and it's good stuff. It just
Kool-Aid?
Takes a while. Koi.
Oh, this is Kool-Aid. I was like, Kool-Aid? Fuck, I want to get my gear from him just because his name's Kool-Aid. But there's one picture you got of I threw one finger in the air.
Uh-huh.
And I used that picture actually to tell a story at the school. And I said, guys, don't pigeonhole yourselves into a certain gimmick. Like, that's, don't typecast yourself. I was like, you never know when something's going to work. I said, and we're like the modern era fucking ding-dongs just without the bells. And
can we
talent.
Get bells?
Well, we can. I'm sure we get bells. We get whatever the fuck we want. I don't think anybody cares. Because I guarantee somebody's going, this got to die this week. There's no fucking way. And just keep going.
That
going,
was
going.
Me for the first month or so. I'm like, here's how we kill it.
Stormy
and we don't
me.
Want to kill it. That's the thing. We're like, having a blast.
That song comes on. You guys come out and the crowd just eats it up. It's just,
fun.
It's perfect. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's
having
fun.
We're
yeah.
having fun.
Yeah.
And
I'm convinced they feel that. We had this discussion earlier because we're talking about we still don't get it. I'm convinced that they're just like, they're having fun. We're having fun with them.
Yeah, that's
what
it is.
They can sense it.
Yeah.
There's no, it's one of those things where it's organic. There's no rhyme or reason. And it's kind of like the love that my wife Stormy has for me. It's organic. And I can't really explain it. She adores me. And I'm a good, really good human. And she fucking hates me, actually. I'm gonna
put out a life insurance policy.
I know. I'm just going to drink a lot of vodka and probably just drive off the cliff. That's a whole list. Sorry. I got lost.
Before you do that, I'll loosen the hood on your car.
You can't touch my LJNs, though. You can touch my Hasbros, your LJNs. I'm burying with
no, I'll take
toys.
Your Hasbros. I don't care about LJNs.
Nope.
Big bricks of rubber.
Bury me with my shit. But it's sort of, honestly, I wish we could explain it. Like, somebody asked me, how did you guys plan that? I wish we did. It was a joke. The whole thing was a joke. It was a rip kind of on James and Chase both, and it kind of backfired on us in a good way, I guess. And we got t-shirts coming out, and they look fantastic. You got a great design on them. And we're having fun. Like, that's it. Like, we're having fun. And when it stops being fun, and then we'll turn, I'll throw through the barbershop window, I'll go on to headline WrestleMania, and he'll be,
no.
like, he'll be
we've already discussed
Lance it. Cassidy, or whatever that thing was.
Cassidy.
Leaf Cassidy, that one. What did I say, Lance Cassidy?
Yeah.
Leaf Cassidy. Yep. Jeremiah Cassidy. Not Riley.
Well, we kind of discussed this, though. We're going to be like the modern-day Greg Valentine and Bruce Beefcake. We're going to be in sofas, no shirts
no
on.
No shirts on.
Belly out.
And a thing of peanuts.
Yeah.
Just fucking sitting there, just freaking grizzled, miserable. And I'll have nipple rings.
Oh, you're going to get the nipple. I wondered which one of those
two. You know, you brought something up, and so, like, let's make this a teachable.
Nipple rings.
Nipple rings.
Let's make this a teachable moment, because you said something about how you talk to your students, and being able to just, at any point, you know, if someone comes to you and says, hey, you guys are together, you got to figure something out, you know? Or if today, Frankie, I need you. WWE called, and they got a spot on TV, and you need to be a lawyer today. You know, right? You just got to go
happens.
Into it.
Yeah, that's what happens. There,
I'll never forget in Knoxville.
Lawyer, it's got to be my cousin, Benny.
In Knoxville, I told you guys right after a match. You guys had just finished a match, you and Stormy and Shane. And I said, hey, do you guys want to do a promo real quick? Like, as you're walking to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And before, you immediately said yes, and we were ready to do it, and you shot it just on the cuff immediately. I filmed an entire show at the National Fairgrounds for a big, you know, a show that cost a lot of money. I can't tell you, out of the 25 wrestlers on that show, I shot two promos, total, the whole night. Nobody had time. They had to get into had to think about what they're gonna do. You guys tag teamed, fucking journeyman, hashtag. An over theme song, you know, I mean, t-shirts, merchandise coming out, you know, all on a whim, on just a whim.
Well, it's you know, you talk about teachable moment. I mean, to Jeremiah's credit too, I mean, he's a trainer, tried and true.
I think that's the reason why I said that, is that both of you guys have an opportunity to kind of talk
absolutely.
About your feelings on that, because you just have to be able to do it.
Well, you know, I've been a fan of his work for a while now, so all kidding aside, and you don't get a chance to run a school like that if you don't know what the hell you're doing. So Crimson and Bram aren't going to put somebody in that position if they don't know what they're doing. You know, I like to think that I know what I'm doing sometimes. Some days I wonder. But I really believe Sal's been successful because he knows what he's looking for to run that school, which is why he has me in the position he's in. Are we perfect? No. Sure, we make mistakes. We're you know, we're no different than anybody else. But I think that we have a gift to be able to give back in a way. And identify talent, and again, cultivate that talent to our own work, and be able to show. Yeah, there's been plenty of times where I've taken matches that you've recorded, and matches of ours that we've tagged or whatever recently, and shown it to my students. So I said, hey, I want you to pick out the mistakes. I want you to take this, pick it apart. Not because I'm your coach, or I want you to tell me how good it is, because the stuff that's good, I know is good, because it's good. I want you to pick it apart. Tell me what we did wrong, what we could do better, what you think could be done better. And I use my stuff as a teachable moment, and use myself as an example. You know, with both good and bad, you know. But one thing I did explain to them was, you know, take every opportunity for what you get, what's given to you. You know, we were presented with an opportunity that we didn't even know. We did it as a joke to kind of pop ourselves. And we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, good, you know, on a good note, you know. But it's been, you know, taking on a life of its own. A lot, really, in part to what Plunkett does. He, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, goes, hey, what about this? I know you're going to say no, but what about this? And, hey, what about that? And it's from the design of the shirts and all that stuff, the creativity part of it, all him. You know, so it's awesome to be able to finally have a partner that knows what the fuck they're doing. Jesus Christ.
I
only took 16,
that.
Like 16 divorces.
Fuck. I don't know, man. I teach my kids a lot from fuck ups I've done in the past, and I've done plenty. I'm getting older in this, and like not as old as this guy in this, but I'm getting older. And I think I'm just to the point where I don't care what I look like anymore. In the mindset of, for a long time, I wouldn't do something because I thought it was stupid, or I just physically, I've got anxiety bad, man. So if I get in the ring and I feel stupid, you know, it's going to trigger my anxiety. It's bad. I guess now I just have finally gotten to that point where they say that all, and I guess he's been here for a while, that all people reach at a certain age where you stop giving a shit. And you realize at the end of the day that this is murder ballet and spandex.
Wow,
so,
I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I stole it somewhere.
Murder ballet and spandex. Yeah. That's pretty damn. I don't think I've ever heard that before. That's
but, I mean, at the end of the day, yeah. If you do a comedy spot and makes me look like an ass, what's it hurt me in real life? If I go to Denny's to get my moons over my hand, is that guy going up, you look like an idiot, don't spit your food. No, he's going to spit my food anyway because he works at Denny's. So I'm going to eat spit anyway.
What's it, have fun doing it.
What's it matter if you did a spot where I fell on my ass and looked like an idiot? Yeah. You know what I mean? And I started wanting to have a lot of fun in this, man. I think I got me personally got too bogged down in trying to make it.
Yep.
And that can be mentally fucking damning. And hey, those people who can stay with that goal and, you know, stay on that track, it's awesome. I wish I could. I think it gets to that point where you guys just stop giving a fuck, man. And not in a bad way. I still want to do good performances in here. And now that I'm training, I want to do even better. You know, and now
better
I'm,
for them, better for the kids.
Yeah,
too.
So and now I'm baby face, so I got to throw arm drives and shit.
You got to have a real strong back to carry me. Shit. I'm the big ascension. When Ryan watches this, he'll know what I'm talking about. I'm the big ascension of the group.
No, this is, for real, this is the guy who every time before we're going to go out of the curtain, I'm going to grab that rope and do nothing. And then I'll think I ran a good spot. He'll run one twice as long. And I'm like, God damn it.
Yep.
I'm having to do nothing.
Yep. Nope, I can't. I try, but it's when you're having fun out there, nothing hurts, nothing bothers you. You kind of just lose it. You lose it into the crowd and you have fun. They become part of you, you become part of them. And it sounds cheesy, but it's real. It's organic. And you don't have to try. It's not work. You just go out and you do it, and it works. And it's that's the way it should be. It shouldn't. Guys make this stuff so complicated. Guys and girls, and I do a lot of producing and agenting too. And it's mind numbing to see how many guys and girls aren't having fun. They made this such hard work and made it so hard on themselves, not physically but mentally. Like it's and again, make the term making it to me is all relevant. It really depends on what your version of making it is. I mean, it's
your fulfillment. If you're being fulfilled.
We traveled the world. We talked about today. He's been Australia. You know, England, Puerto Rico.
Traveled the world one place.
He's been, just follow my lead here, kid.
Gotcha.
So
I'm over. Just,
everywhere I've been, he's been. But honestly, how many people you know have been to Australia?
Yeah.
I can guarantee you, in this town that we're sitting in, probably none. Okay. So to somebody on the outside, they see somebody goes to Australia to work and do what they love. Well, that's pretty damn big. I mean, that's not going to Mobile, Alabama. That's on the other side of the world. Okay, so
you ever been to Mobile? Pretty dope.
Well, it is the other side of the world, but in a different way. It's like a freaking alien vest, weirdo Jack Wardner's there. Another one. I mean, it's relevant. I mean, it's irrelevant to what you're thinking, what you're doing. I mean, I spent 2 years in developmental impact, Ring of Honor stuff, and Evolve, and over WWN. So you could say, well, you made it. You walked down WWE rampway, you know, or you made it. You went to England. It's all relevant to what you know. To me, when I look back on what I've done in 18 years, it's a pretty cool shit, you know, and had a lot of fun and met a lot of people. Had I gone to law school like I had originally planned, I would have never in a million years had the fun. Yes, I was going to go to law school. Trust me, it would have been the worst idea of my life because I wouldn't have lasted a year.
You would have been a legit My Cousin Vinny.
I know, fucking two Utes. My biological
you're not seeing my cousin,
like this.
Not, he's not popping on this. I thought he hadn't seen both of My Cousin Vinny.
He's popping on the inside. but, you know, you think about what you've done. And I mean, he works for one of the biggest companies in the Mid-South. So, you know, with some of the best talent coming in and out. So you think about that. There's a lot of people that don't get that opportunity. You know, don't get that chance to work with Chase Stevens or Damian Wayne or Crimson or Jack Stane. And you work with these guys, and Dutch Mantel. And, you know, these are guys who really watched on television. And we get a chance.
He's in a fucking commercial, for God's sake.
That popped me so big, I didn't even know he did it. And
in
I was scrolling through Facebook, and I'm like, I see.
Okay,
Red
I thought
Lobster
you were about to say it aired in.
No.
Well, like, Jesus
no,
Christ.
No, aired Poughkeepsie once at 3 a.m. So I see the Red Lobster Endless Shrimp thing, and I'm like, why did he share the Endless Shrimp thing?
Oh.
Because the bit happened, right? So I click on it, thinking this is going to be an Endless Shrimp fucking thing, because I wanted to see it, because I like the Endless Shrimp bit. And it's fucking Chinlaw's commercial, and I'm like, Stormy, get over here, look at this fucking like commercial. She's like, why is it the Endless Shrimp thing? No, it's not the Endless Shrimp thing. It's fucking, and the commercial was fantastic. I couldn't tell you what the cell phone company is. I don't care.
It's Advanced Financial.
Oh, Advanced Financial, okay. I thought it was on cell phone. Whatever, same shit. So,
but we could redo that whole thing and just do it about the actual phone. I'm calling Alex.
But he was on a phone, right? He was on a phone. Yeah, okay, so I'm not that crazy.
My chinlock really sucks.
But I popped so big. I watched it a dozen times. And I showed it to my students and I said, look at this. And a couple of them said, well, who's that? And I said, you're fired. Get out. I fucking show you the matches every goddamn week. You know who's that? So I said, look at this. These are two guys. I said, they're pros. I said, and they're having fun. They're doing this commercial. I said, I don't even care what the commercial's about. I said, they're having a blast doing it. And whether or not they get paid or not is irrelevant. Who knows that yeah, well, Advanced Financial, legitimate company. I hope you got paid.
I wish we were getting
a hot dog and a ham sandwich and a hot dog. Whatever.
Actually, a ham sandwich sounds pretty good.
Well, Advanced Financial is
a big
company. That's a pretty cool deal. Like,
yeah.
Again, that's one of those fun things that you look back on and you go, that's pretty cool. Nobody can take that from you.
Yeah.
You know? And that's important. You look back on the things that people can't take from you, your experiences, your places you've been, went to, things like that. You can't, those are educations you can't buy, you know. I mean, shit, whether it's even the tried and true student shows, being able to see those students, you know, progress and get better. The girl that you had here, it was a couple weeks ago, blonde girl that was working in the ring. I can't think of what her name is.
Brittany.
Brittany.
She has black hair, but all right, whatever.
She has black hair or she has blonde hair?
Well, she's got the streak.
She has a blonde streak,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. Like, I knew it was blonde somewhere.
I'm sitting here like,
fuck, she was blonde somewhere. But she, I remember seeing her months back, and her progression is night and day difference from then to now. And some of the things that she wasn't doing then, she's doing now, you know, is on a good, in a good way. And so that's a tribute to the training she's getting, you know, the direction she's getting. So again, that's another form of making it. You're able to do something that somebody else is not able to do. Training isn't easy. You know, it doesn't, just because you're good in the ring doesn't make you a good trainer. You know, just because you made it to WWE, it doesn't make you a good trainer. There's plenty of guys that are under contract that can't train anybody. Can't train anybody.
So let's go ahead and let's end the video by each one of you guys giving two trainees that you really see something in, and the names for people to check out, maybe check them out on social media. Of course, it doesn't mean that anybody's better than the other, just two people off your head.
Go ahead, whenever you're ready.
Go ahead.
A34 Beauty.
Fucking asshole.
Brittany Garcia. She's going out there and she's putting work in. She, what, because I cut you off?
She is good.
No, she's doing good. She's starting to find herself a little bit. She's sending me every one of her matches, and I send her back at least a page of notes.
Good.
And then she sends them to Steve as well, and he sends her a page of notes. And I'm happy to report that they match, because
that's a plus. That's definitely
I was like,
plus.
Oh, God. But,
that's a plus.
But no, she sends me every match she gets on film, and I still break down everyone.
She's got an attitude, too. A really good attitude. And women's wrestling these days is rough.
Yeah,
it's not easy to coach, deal with, train, direct.
There's a lot of women's wrestlers. There's a lot of competition.
That, and they've got a lot to their credit. They've got a long road to hoe. You know, they've got an uphill battle. It's a man's business. I don't care. That's not sexist. It is what it is. You know, being a firefighter is a man's business. Okay? Being a race car is a man's business. So if you're a woman in a man's business, you got to work double, triple hard sometimes to get that respect. And, you know, they do have a harder time. Sometimes what comes along with that is a little bit of ego, and you know, you have to deal with that too. So what you do, again, as a trainer, producer, director, you have to know how to deal with that, you know. But to see where she's come from is night and day different. So,
who else, Plunky?
We also got out there, Peyton Polson's doing really, really good.
He's landing bookings everywhere right now.
He's doing good, man, and he's really of that as much as I can work. I'm going to try to work, and that's good. I'm really happy to see what he's doing, because we were wondering, he's very small, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And skinny,
real skinny,
too, Like, he's a shorter guy, but I mean, not obscenely
stunt size?
No,
but he's very thin.
Yeah, but he's thin, yeah, he might be thinner than Marco. You know what I mean? So we were wondering if he's going to be able to stick it, and like, at one point during training, like, he's getting banged up a lot.
Your body's not big, you know, you don't have a lot of cushion.
Yeah, so he's finding his style and developing himself, and I think he's going to do all right. He needs to get some new tights, and I tell him that all the time, and he's finally looking into some, because yellow is not a good color. Yeah, do bright yellow.
Oh.
And yellow kick pad covers, because I know you love kick
pads. Did he get it on, like, the high spots inside gear?
That I don't know. He showed him up, he's like, here's my tights. I'm like, those are...
I guarantee you, with the high spots in stock,
yellow.
And you're like a grab bag, and you just send them over the head.
Hey, you do not talk about Brandon Wolf that way.
That's creepy. That wish.com is creepy.
What about
somebody
you, Frankie?
Somebody tried to sell me like a baby's face or something. Like
did it come because you looked at 37 cock rings?
What is that? What does it have to do with the Hill of Beans?
Because everything that Wish shows you,
cock
there's an algorithm.
I'm so lost.
That's why it's always showing me powdered substance. That one day it came up with a bullet, a little coke bullet, you know?
Yeah. Chalk for powerlifting.
All corporate. Okay.
Chalk.
What I'm saying, Wish is showing me this stuff. Not that I'm doing any of this stuff.
So weird. Kelsey Heather is probably my first pick. She's she debuted on Do or Die, the iPay-per-view, WWN's NXT recruitment camp. Had a pay-per-view for all the trainees that came through that did the plot. Was a fly, I'm not crazy. But she did fantastic, and nobody believed me. And I was sitting next to Ciampa?
Yeah.
Ciampa. I'm horrible with his name. I butchered his name sitting next to him, and he just kept looking at me, shaking his head. And he asked
like,
me.
It's like, all right, Kiyak.
Yeah, exactly. So
Keystone.
So, no shit. So he asked me how many matches she had, and I said it was her first one. And he said, you're full shit. There's no way that's her first match. And Gabe didn't believe me. Sal knew, but Gabe didn't believe me. But it was her first match. And she asked me what she should do in camp. And I said, absolutely. She's a former Tampa Bay Bucks cheerleader. She's a former Tampa Bay Lightning cheerleader. She's currently on the cheerleading squad for Orlando Magic. So she's no stranger to being in front of a crowd. No stranger to performing. So I knew that she was a natural, and she had a look from NXT about a year ago, and Hunter told her, you know, get some footage. You need some in-ring work. I need to see some on HD camera, some work. You know, we can do promos all day long and talk, but I want to see you in the ring and see how you look, you know, work-wise. She's in phenomenal shape. Good attitude. She's a little spitfire. You know, that shit, I like that. You know, she's no nonsense, but she wants to learn it. You know, and she's got a ton of energy. And it comes out in her work. You know, she came out and killed the promo. Coach Brookside and Coach Regal loved it. So Gabe loved it. And she came in and produced to me in the ring. And we had a 5-minute pay-per-view match and killed it. You know, came together and hit her negatives, accentuated her positives. And she came away with a really, really good rapport with WWN as a whole. So she's going to be my standout. If you ask me a year from now, I bet my last dollar she's going to be, you know, I'd be sending her to NXT in about a year. So when she's probably, I'd say probably about 26, 27. So she's at that ripe age right now. You know, she's smart. So she's not a young kid, you know, no trouble. And she's a great athlete. I think second would probably be Richard Bunnell. He was my first student. He came to me at 306 pounds. He's 198, I think, now.
Wow.
So in about a year and a half, he's, you know, lost, you know, a small child, you know. I remember he came to me. It was Sonny Blaze. I don't know if you ever
remember Sonny
Blaze.
Yeah, I know who Sonny Blaze is.
Sonny Blaze sent him to me. Sonny Blaze became a very good friend of mine.
UWF guy?
WWE. He was the first. Actually, he was
No, UWF.
Oh, no.
The Herb Abrams one.
No, Sonny Blaze.
This was WWF job guy.
Yeah, okay.
He's known to feast.
John Arezzi. The John Arezzi has a podcast, and Sonny Blaze used to be on his radio show, and so they're constantly playing clips of the radio show on the podcast, you know. And so I've, like the last I know exactly who Sonny Blaze is.
His claim to fame was Undertaker's first TV match. He was the enhanced guy for Undertaker. So he calls me up one day. He goes, "Hey, he's Brooklyn guy. Hey, Frankie, I got this kid to send your way." And I said, "Okay." That was my first student. He goes, "I know you got training center open, and I'm send him your way." I said, "Okay." So he says, and this kid walks in. 300 pounds, completely out of shape. And I asked him what his goals were. What do you want to do? And he goes, "I want to lose weight, I want to get in shape, I want to be alive, you know, first off." He goes, "But I want to be a wrestler." And I said, "What have you ever done athletic?" He goes, "I played baseball." And he goes, "I just got really out of shape, and here I am." And I said, "Okay, I want to make two promises. You're going to learn more about yourself than you ever will in your entire life." I said, "Secondly, you might figure out this ain't for you." So those are your two promises. I can't tell you which one it's going to be. So I said, "Stick with me." I said, I promise you, you'll learn one of those at the end of this tenure. And he stuck with me. And now he made his debut 3 months ago at right at about 200 pounds. He was 203 when he made his debut. In fantastic shape. Wore the journeyman jacket.
Coverdale jacket. Yep. Okay, right on.
Yep. I'm extremely proud of this kid. He's tons of heart. I wish I could take his heart and multiply it, because it wasn't very easy. What we do didn't come easy for him. I'm actually not crying. I got a gnat in my eye. Bugs.
It's okay.
I'm calling corporate.
It's 2019. It's all right to cry.
I know.
It's okay, Grandma.
I don't care.
But he's... He didn't give up. I mean, he tore his quad once, or partially tore his quad, and he refused to stop. He came every day sick.
You put him in a lion tamer on top of the table.
I did. He came sick. I made him sit in the car, you know, not to get everybody sick, but I wanted him to watch. So he'd pull up to the bay door and watch from his car and take notes. Because I didn't want to get anybody sick.
I'm not laughing for bad. Yeah. That's tremendous.
He did not want to stay home. And I said, "Well, you can't come here because you can get everybody sick if you defeat the purpose." He goes, "Well, I want to be there." And I said, "Here's what we'll do." I said, "I'll open the bay door for you." I said, "You just have to sit in your car, take notes." And he did. And he came. I didn't think he was going to, and he did. But he's become my leader. I call him the foreman. We got him a little construction hat that says foreman on it, because he runs a setup and tear down. And it gives him something to do as a leader. And he worked his ass off. And he debuted. I took him to Miami with me with the Headbangers, and they gave him really good feedback. He worked his ass off down there in a little 5-minute spot. And anything I need him for, he's there. He was driving a ring truck one day, and the serpentine belt broke. I guess this is where the serpentine belt broke. This kid walked into Walmart, bought a thing of pantyhose, came out, tied the pantyhose, made a serpentine belt, and got that truck to the building. Make sure IPW went off that day. I remember he told me, Ron tells me, he goes, the ring truck just got here. Richard put pantyhose in the serpentine belt. I said, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means, but it's fucking fantastic. But that's the kind of kid he is. And, you know, will he make it to WWE or make it on, you know, like I said, everything's relevant. Who knows? You know,
right.
There's more of a chance that he won't than he will. But I don't think he cares. I think he just wants to be a wrestler, and that's what he's doing. And he's having fun doing it, and he's my foreman. And those would be my two picks that I'm probably most proud of. That that if I was to take on the road with me right now, without a doubt, I would take him right now. Both. So.
Put over both schools?
Tried and True Academy at triedandtruepro.com.
Where's that work? Oh, WWN training, WWNGC.
As many times as you put it on Facebook.
I know. No one shares more than Frankie.
WWNGC, World Wrestling Network Training Center, 8823 Olmerton Road, Largo, Florida. Give us a call at 727-401-2836. Help make those dreams reality.
The smile. Yeah, there it is.
That's a way better plug than mine.
Yeah, well, it's okay. We'll get you a kid.
All right, hold on. So we're done, but
now this one we're just gonna make out on camera.
Now there's more because you. I need you to discuss Sonny Blaze right now.
Okay.
Tell me how you met him. How you know him? What he's like?
He actually owns a vape shop right in Newport Richie, like right around the corner. His real name's Al Schaefer. He's fantastic. Fucking awesome.